Welcome to this deep dive. We're here to unpack the critical details from the legal world, making sense of what truly matters.
Glad to be here.
Today, we're getting into some of the finer points of Massachusetts criminal trials. Specifically, we're looking at stipulations those agreements lawyers make and also the rules around police questioning.
Yeah, two really crucial areas. We've got a couple of key cases lined up.
Exactly. We'll be digging into Commonwealth v. Ortiz, that's a 1996 case on stipulations, and then a newer case that builds on Commonwealth v. Rosario, dealing with police interrogations.
Right. And our goal really is to see how these seemingly technical rules actually affect the fairness and, you know, the efficiency of the whole legal process.
You might think they're just minor details, but they hit on fundamental rights. Let's dive into Commonwealth v. Ortiz first.
Okay, Ortiz. So the basic facts are, Ortiz was convicted of distributing cocaine near a school zone.
Standard enough charge. But the interesting part is the procedure.
Right. Before the trial even started, his lawyer and the prosecutor made an oral agreement, a stipulation that the substance involved was cocaine.
Okay, so they agreed on that fact. Saves time, I guess. No need for lab reports in court.
Potentially. But here's the twist. The jury. They didn't actually hear about this agreement until the judge gave his final instructions, like at the very end of the trial.
Wait, so during the part where evidence is presented, nothing was formally shown to prove it was cocaine? No certificate, no testimony about it?
Nope. Just this agreement that the jury wasn't told about until wrap-up.
Okay, so that raises a pretty big question, legally speaking.
Exactly. The core issue for the Supreme Judicial Court, the SJC, was this. Did delaying the reveal of that stipulation until the final instructions violate Ortiz's right? His right to have every element of the crime proven beyond a reasonable doubt during the evidence phase?
It feels like a key piece of the puzzle was missing until the very end. What did the SJC decide?
Well, maybe surprisingly, they said no, it didn't violate his rights. They affirmed the conviction.
Really? How did they justify that? It seems like the prosecution didn't fully prove its case during the main trial phase.
Their reasoning had a couple of parts. First, they looked at how the trial actually played out.
Okay.
They noted that both sides, the prosecution and Ortiz's defense team, basically acted as if the substance was cocaine the whole time. It was just assumed. The defense never questioned it.
So the court felt Ortiz wasn't actually harmed or prejudiced by the late reveal because his own lawyer wasn't fighting that point anyway.
Precisely. Since it wasn't a contested issue during the trial, they felt the timing didn't unfairly disadvantage him. Prejudice, in this context, means being unfairly hindered in presenting a defense.
Okay, that makes some practical sense if nobody's arguing about it.
Right, and the second key piece was the judge's instructions to the jury.
What about them?
The judge explicitly told the jury, hey, there was this agreement, this stipulation, that the substance was cocaine. You should accept that as fact.
So the SJC felt those instructions were enough to formally satisfy the prosecution's burden of proof for that element, even though it came late.
That was their conclusion, yes.
Yeah.
The clear instruction cured the lack of evidence during the main phase.
So the big principle from Ortiz is stipulations on essential elements are okay, even if formally introduced late, as long as the jury gets clear instructions and the defendant wasn't, you know, unfairly impacted by the timing.
That sums it up well.
Yeah.
But, you know, this immediately raises a question for anyone studying law or just listening.
Yeah.
Why even allow stipulations to replace evidence on key elements? Isn't that kind of risky? A shortcut.
It does feel like it could be. Are we trading thoroughness for speed?
It's a valid concern. Stipulations definitely help streamline trials. Imagine proving the chain of custody for every piece of evidence if it's not even disputed. It saves a lot of time.
True.
But the courts are, or should be, very careful. They need to make sure a defendant isn't being, like, pushed to giving up their right to make the prosecution prove everything.
So, in Ortiz, what made the court feel comfortable, it wasn't forced.
A big factor was that Ortiz's lawyer agreed to it voluntarily before the trial. It wasn't sprung on them. And again, those clear jury instructions were key. The SJC felt that in this specific case, the balance was struck correctly.
Okay, that clarifies Ortiz. Now let's switch gears to the second topic, that Rosario 6-hour rule extension.
Right. Commonwealth v. Rosario is a landmark case in Massachusetts. Generally, it says statements a defendant makes within 6 hours of arrest are usually admissible if they got their Miranda warnings and were told they could use a phone. This newer case looks at how far that rule stretches.
So what happened in this recent case?
Okay, so police arrested a guy. He had a warrant out for murder, but also unrelatedly, charges for destroying property.
Got it. Two separate things.
Yes. Now, within 6 hours of his arrest, the police interrogated him, and he made incriminating statements about the murder. Crucially, he was formally arraigned, brought to court, just over 5 hours after the arrest.
Okay, 5 hours. That's inside the six-hour window from Rosario.
Yeah.
So, what's the issue? Sounds like statements should be admissible.
Well, the trial court initially disagreed. They actually suppressed the statements.
Why? If it was within the 6 hours.
The trial judge felt the police essentially delayed the arraignment, even though it was within 6 hours, specifically to get time to interrogate him about the murder charge he was already arrested for. They saw it as undermining the purpose of prompt arraignment.
Ah, so the question became, does the Rosario 6 hour rule still apply cleanly when the questioning is about the very crime the person was arrested for under a warrant, not some new crime discovered later?
Exactly. That was the core issue the SJC tackled.
Yeah.
And they came down on the side of admissibility. They reversed the trial court.
So the SJC said, yes, the 6 hour rule applies even in that situation.
Correct. They held that statements made within that 6 hour window are generally admissible, provided Miranda was given correctly. The right to a phone call was honored, and the statements were voluntary. The fact that charges were already pending for the crime being discussed didn't automatically change that.
What was their logic? Why wouldn't existing charges trigger maybe stricter rules?
Their main point was that they didn't see a meaningful legal difference between questioning about pending charges versus questioning about potential new crimes during that initial post-arrest window.
Mm-hmm.
They really emphasized the safeguards. Was Miranda properly given? Was the waiver knowing involuntary? Was the phone call offered? If those are met, the court felt the core protections were in place, regardless of what crime was discussed.
So the focus remains on those procedural safeguards for the defendant, rather than the status of the charges being discussed.
Largely, yes. But it's really important to mention, especially for our listeners, that this wasn't unanimous in spirit. Justices Liakos and O'Connor wrote concurring opinions.
Meaning, they agreed with the result. The statements were admissible in this case, but had reservations.
Exactly. They agreed on the outcome for this specific defendant, but they voiced concerns about the broader idea. They questioned whether the 6 hour rule should effectively allow police to delay arraignment just to interrogate someone about charges they're already facing.
Yeah.
It highlights a real tension, you know, between the Rosario safe harbor and the right to prompt arraignment.
That's a critical nuance. Different judges seeing the potential implications differently. So, practically speaking, what does this mean for police?
It gives them clearer guidance. It confirms they generally have that 6 hour window post arrest to question someone about any crime, even when they were arrested for.
Right.
But, and this is a huge but, the voluntariness of the statement and the validity of the Miranda waiver are always subject to challenge.
Right. It's not a free pass. The prosecution still has to prove those elements if challenged.
Absolutely. Each case will still turn on its specific facts regarding the waiver and voluntariness.
Okay, let's pull back. We've looked at Ortiz and stipulations and this Rosario extension. What's the common theme here?
I think both cases really show the courts grappling with balancing efficiency and practicality against fundamental rights. It's a constant tightrope walk.
How so?
Well, Ortiz allows a procedural shortcut, the stipulation, to make trials more efficient, but only if fairness to the defendant isn't compromised through things like clear jury instructions.
Okay.
And the Rosario extension gives police a clearer operational window, which helps investigations, but it heavily emphasizes that this window isn't absolute constitutional rights like Miranda, and the right against self-incrimination are the bedrock.
So for law students listening, the takeaway is that procedural rules aren't just dry text.
Yeah.
They're dynamic, constantly interpreted.
Then they have real impact. What seems minor, like the timing of information or a six-hour limit, can determine whether evidence comes in, whether conviction stands. It shapes the whole process.
It really highlights that criminal procedure isn't just about finding guilt or innocence in a vacuum.
Not at all. It's fundamentally about how we get there. Is the process fair? Are rights being protected? That's just as important.
All right, let's quickly summarize the key points from today's deep dive.
Okay. From Ortiz, stipulations or agreements on facts can work as proof, even if introduced late, if the jury is clearly instructed and the defendant wasn't unfairly prejudiced.
And from the Rosario extension, that six-hour safe harbor for post-arrest questioning is broad. It applies even to questioning about the crime the person was arrested for, as long as Miranda and the phone call right are fully respected and the statement is voluntary.
And tying it all together, criminal procedure is this constant balancing act aiming for a just and fair process for everyone involved.
Excellent summary. Thanks for digging into these with me. It's always fascinating to see the legal machinery up close.
My pleasure. It really gets to the heart of how the system functions.
Okay, before we wrap up, here's something to think about. We've seen how these rules aim for order and efficiency. But consider this, can these same rules sometimes create tension with deeper principles of justice or individual rights? What unintended side effects might rules like these have, and how might they need to change in the future to keep that balance right? Definitely food for thought. Thanks again for joining this deep dive.